Welcome back to NALP's Young Professional Network podcast, Growing in the Green Industry. Today's podcast is powered by our Young Professional Network partner, Steel. Steel makes a full line of gasoline and battery-powered outdoor power equipment for demanding landscape professionals. Find yours at steelusa.com. Your hosts today include myself, Brett Lindsay with RM Landscape, and Skylar Westgaard with Landcare. Skylar, how are you?
Doing well, Brett. It's good to hear from you and see you again. I'm excited for our guest today. I say that every week, and it's
sincere. Yeah. It's sincere. You mean it. There's a genuine sincerity. All right. Well, who do we have with us?
Yeah, let me introduce our guest today. We're excited to have Kyle. Kyle, your last name, Narsavage, is that how you say that? I should have asked
you. Got
that.
It perfect. You got awesome. It on the first try. Awesome.
Kyle has more than 25 years of experience in the landscape industry and has been a leader of Green Sweep since the company's modest beginnings, which I hope we'll have time to get into a little bit. He and his brother started the company when they were mowing lawns in their neighborhood as kids. Kyle currently guides operations, creates a positive work environment, and strives to achieve strategic goals and develop the company's vision and structure. He constantly ensures business and field operations reflect their core values, culture, and the green sweep advantage. Kyle has a bachelor's degree in landscape contracting with a concentration in business from Pennsylvania State University. And in his free time, he enjoys, I'm emphasizing enjoys, competing in marathons, half marathons, and duathlons, most of which participates as a Parkinson's champion, which represents the Parkinson's Foundation. So, Kyle, I read that you started the company with your brother when you were about 7 years old, which was pretty cool. Did I miss anything else in that bio?
No, you got just about all of it. I'm not that complicated of a guy. I've been doing this my whole life. I love doing it, and still love doing it all these years later.
And to say that you have all that spare time, and it's you take all that to do marathons, not just a quick like game of chess or read a newspaper. No, let's run for hours upon end. So that'll be a fun part of the story later here, I'm sure.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I've just started running, Kyle, this year, and I have never been a runner, and think people that ran were crazy. That's why I emphasize the enjoy, but. As part of wanting to get healthier, lose some weight, improve my heart health on doctor's orders, I started to run. And believe it or not, I haven't ran a marathon or a half marathon. I've ran a 5K. And I've started running, and I have to agree, like there's something about that runner's high and it making you feel good. And believe it or not, I've actually been running, three and a half miles, like three or four times a week. So yeah. You probably don't want to just talk about marathons this whole
time. Oh, no, I mean, we can do it if that's what you want to do.
That's it. Yeah. Talk the splits, the space.
I admire it.
Yeah. I appreciate it. It's a good stress relief, and I like doing it because it gets my mind off of it. And I feel like I can go for a run and no one can really get in touch with me. So I kind of go out there, clear my head, and come back.
Yeah, Skylar, I think the biggest goal, and it's probably not good for heart health, is just the fear of something's chasing you, and that'll get you motivated, right? So it's just like, just think that bear is right behind you. That'll get you going really fast. So
yeah, that's the way. Well, I have to admit the first 10 minutes still suck, but after that, it feels good.
Yeah,
that's about right. Well, share with us, Kyle, at a young age, you had the dream to build a business. But those early starts, I think those are always fun to share. What did you learn or what was your goals at the beginning of the organization?
Yeah, sure. So I started out when I was only 7 years old, just cutting like one or two neighbors' yards because my older brother wanted to go to a overnight basketball camp. My parents said, hey, you've got to be able to pay for half of it. It's pretty expensive. And he cut one grass and said, man, I need help. And, he tapped me in, he's 4 years older than me. And, he kind of went on a different path. He, went into some civil engineering, landscape architecture, and I never lost the bug of landscape contracting and being out in the field. I loved it from that moment forward, kept it going all through high school. got some of my friends in high school to work with me. And then I kept it going through college. I went to Penn State, majored in landscape contracting. I knew this is what I wanted to do. It was my passion. I feel very blessed and fortunate that I was able to find my passion at such a young age. And I could be intentional with all the decisions that I made to achieve my goal of owning and operating a successful landscape contracting firm. And went to college, kept it going through there, came back on the weekends to keep the company going. Because I'm in Maryland and I went to school in Penn State, which is like 3 hours away. So I missed a couple parties and a couple football games at Penn State, but good life lessons along the way and really enjoyed doing it. Graduated from Penn State and had the opportunity to go work at other firms, but I knew that I wanted to take a chance on myself and keep it going. So started right after I graduated from college in 2007 with I was able to convince one employee to stick with me because I said, hey, I'm actually going to do this like full time. And I had a lot of guys helping me part time, but one guy wanted to take a chance on me because I said, hey, this is going to be real now. We're going to do this like 5-6 days a week instead of, you know, on the weekends, and kind of just started growing from there and been going ever since and got a great team that has bought in around our vision and our culture. And yeah, the sky's the limit. We just keep growing, and it attributes to my team. I can only do so much. I've got great people who I've surrounded myself with who are way smarter than me, who help propel this to the next level.
I love hearing when we're interviewing guests, and we'll get into more into Kyle's story, but it's so great to just hear your story, you know, hear the stories of our guests and how they got to where they are. I personally really appreciate that. It resonates with me. And I think it resonates with our listeners too, to just, you know, see where, you know, where you started as a kid and what you've built. I would recommend to our listeners, I haven't done this before, but push pause on the recording for just a minute and go to GreenSweep's website and look at their company timeline. And you can actually see some pictures of Kyle and his brother back in those days with their lawnmowers. So if you need a little visual addition to our podcast, just hit pause for a minute, go to their website, and it's really fun to see some pictures of the story that you just shared.
Yeah, the pictures are awesome. I think the fashion is even better from like early 90s and cutting grass. That was some solid choices back then.
So Kyle, how old are you? I'm trying to gauge how old you are compared to me.
Yeah, so I'm 38.
38?
Yep.
Okay, so you're about I'm 40. I'll be 42 here in next month. So yeah, I recognize that I could have been in that picture too. I remember wearing that same thing and pushing those same lawnmowers.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was good times. And, got my first truck when I was like a junior in high school, a little Ford Ranger, and drove that thing around. And, I thought I was the king of the castle, man. So it was a lot of fun. So a lot of hard work and taught me a lot of good life lessons. And, still sticking with that today.
It's the, awesome. It continues the entrepreneurship, especially in our industry. So I was with some CobleSkills students, this past week. They came to visit our organization, and some of them are going to be self-employed, and they're starting the business, not Kyle T, like the same path that you did, or the same thing my father did many years ago. And it's so different timelines, and different challenges, but they're all going through the same parts. And I love this industry because you can do it. It's easy entry. You start with a mower and a friend, and you get that, and you could establish yourself and grow. And if you got it, it'll keep going for you. But I think it's like the conversation always is, well, would you start a business now? And, you know, we all know things about it and what the struggles were, but for that young person that's mowing grass in their neighborhood or has got an opportunity to build something for somebody and to gets the next biggest job, like that still keeps happening. And so as tough as business is now, my father started the business in the 70s, probably was in the 80s, it was even tougher than now. And so it's just an interesting conversation here. The origin stories are slightly different from each other, right? Like a little bit, but not terribly. And they're still happening today. And that I think is exciting, that there's going to be, you know, and they're going to be our competition, but there's still going to be some beautiful companies that are created in the many years to come. It's not over in that cycle of it.
Oh yeah, totally. I think the entrepreneurial spirit, and you see that in the conferences that you go to, whether you attend Elevate or anything like that. It's great to see the younger generation, and like you said, like it's still alive and well. And that's the great thing about America. You just put in the hard work and dedication. Good things will happen.
So here's a question for you, Kyle and Brett, as well. Both having, you know, built companies, you know, from being kids, in a little bit different way, of course, as Brett, as you talked about. But one of the questions that I kind of jotted down in preparation for a call is, if you are talking to some of our listeners that are just starting their careers, and they're maybe specifically, they're just starting their own company. So they're where you were at, you gentlemen were at, you know, a couple decades ago or so. What advice or those that may want to, maybe they're in college and they're thinking about starting their own business. What maybe advice or would you give to them now to start thinking about? I know that could be a lot of things, but I'd love to have you talk to that crowd a little bit.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I probably don't want to hear this, but I actually talked to a guy at a career fair just recently, and he was talking about maybe starting his own company, maybe going to work for someone else. And I said, you know, remove your backup plan. Because if you have a backup plan, you're always going to fall back on it. Bet on yourself and go all in. He's going to graduate from school. He's going to have a degree that I said, you know, if somehow, some way it doesn't work out, you can go get a job somewhere else. But for me, it's betting all in on yourself and realizing that there is no backup plan. To me, also, I wasn't the smartest guy growing up. I never have been. But my biggest thing is, you know, hard work's always going to get you through. You work hard and you treat people the right way, and it's going to work out well. The third thing is, I got a little bit older and I probably got over some of my cockiness and arrogance. Was there's so many great resources. There's so many great people who have done it before you and who are willing to share their successes, their failures. And like Brett, like you were saying, like they might be competition, but in this industry, it's such a giving industry that you can join a peer group or get involved in NALP, and you can pick the brains of people who have, you know, really, really succeeded and failed, and you can learn from it. So I think having an open mind to that and just going all in on yourself is a good recipe for me.
Yeah, it comes down to the dynamic of the person. The entrepreneurial spirit, I think, has to be there. It doesn't have to be at this highlighted, you know, high elevated level, but you got to understand what it's going to take in those early parts of the time. And so if you're really a technical person, then you got to find that quick support of sales or, you know, vice versa. But in the early pages, you got to do it all. And so you don't have to do it all well. You sort of do need to fail a little bit here and there to know where you need to grow the most. And then I always like to frame things as that, be curious. I mean, to Kyle's point about just the networking and knowing that, how do you learn it? And how do you learn it really fast? And you know, again, maybe it wasn't any different many years ago that you got to learn this thing quicker because the competition's learning it pretty fast too. And so again, it's just the same cyclical world of it. But I recognize that if I could go back, it's a, you know, spend more time, learn this part of the business a little bit differently, or invest some time into this, and you won't be making the same mistakes down the road. Or you know, and probably around the people. To our success is built off the good people. So we've all experienced tough people that have been not right fits for the organization. When you know that and you feel your gut says, go back and just make that change quickly, like, you know, do those kind of things. So, you know, I think be excited about it and put your head down and grind is those early years. But there's a lot of ways to take that hard work and really produce fast results and see what happens. So, again, it's all about the people. But I've seen some really cool companies start and establish themselves and are accelerating at much faster rates than, you know, our organization's ever done it. And I'm like, man, we can't be the established company. We've got to get out there. We got to reimagine some parts of this so that, you know, even at 50 years old, we're still doing something that a young startup company would be doing. And you know, Skyler, for you all, I mean, it's the same thing goes back, large organization, but you bring in the right people and they think differently. You're willing to invest into the R&D and the curiosities of how businesses can be run better, and you model those parts. And so it's, I think the playbook is relatively the same between all of our organizations. Some people just have to go at it in a different scale or invest in different ways, but we all need to fundamentally be operating that same way. Think about it, build the right team, make people really, really happy.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the people part is the most powerful driver of, you know, success, and especially in the type of work that we do. For sure, our equipment and our processes and our business structure and software and stuff are important, but it's the people, right? It's the people behind that drives that. So it was fun to Kyle to hear you talk about, oh, I had that one guy that stayed and he was willing to bet on you also, right? You talked about bet on yourself and have those people that are willing to like see the vision. And we've other times in the podcast with other guests, we've talked about that hard time of like, when do you need to let somebody go? Cause they're not, you know, adding that value. So this might be a good time to bring up another question that I had for Kyle. You have this, and GreenSweep has this, I don't know, motto, this saying of row the boat. And it makes me think of one of my favorite books, which is Boys in the Boat, about the 1936 men's rowing team that took the gold at the Germany Berlin Olympics and the importance of them working together. And I would love to hear you, Kyle, talk about how that motto, that culture of row the boat, what it means to you personally, and then how you have built that into the business with the people in your business and how that plays out.
Sure. Like we were talking about earlier, you know, my success is directly tied to my team, and my team is what makes our company. So for Row the Boat, it's our internal company mantra. It's what guides everything that we do. It's what defines our culture. About, I don't know, 3-4 years ago, maybe it was 5 years ago, we realized that we were just lacking it. We were very process oriented. We were very results driven, and there wasn't much culture. And we said, hey, like we've got to do something in here. Cause like operations couldn't see what finance was doing. Marketing couldn't see, you know, what someone else was doing. And we all tied it together. And I came up with the phrase of row the boat, because we say, like, when you're in a boat and you're rowing on the same direction, the boat's going to go straight. But if you miss one person on the boat, you know, stops rowing, then that boat's going to go off course and you're not going to achieve your goal. And every single person on the boat's just as important. You could be in marketing. You could be the guy out in the field with the weed whacker. You could be the owner of the company. Every single person has a seat on the boat. There are different seats, but they're equally important. And we're all rowing towards the same direction, and we all need each other. So it captures a sense of team success for us. And it's defined by our attitudes, behaviors, and our expectations. We have a set of boat rules here. It's our non-negotiables, and they're pretty simple. There's 10 of them. And they set the standard for the type of people who are success with our team. Well, people with a strong work ethic, and who are willing to sacrifice for the team. We've got the row the boat mantra on every single, you know, piece of marketing material we have around here. We have it on our uniforms. We have it on banners around the shop. We begin and end every single meeting saying row the boat in English and in Spanish. We give out row the boat chips to team members, and then they will accumulate those to cash them in for swag, or they can get work boots on it. So we have a row the boat rewards program. And if they go above and beyond, or they display a core value, or they, you know, exceed in one of the boat rules, and the whole team is bought into it. It's what defines us and what differentiates us. Like we said, this industry is hard and it can chew you up and spit you out. And it's not easy work. It's hard work, no matter what role you have. And as the company grows, it's kind of hard to see where you fit in that and where you see your other coworkers, what they're doing. And everyone's real, real vital here. And again, no one's above each other. We're all equal. And again, I'm very, very passionate about row the boat. My team is passionate about it. It's it's probably my biggest achievement outside of anything. It's just the culture that we've been able to provide here. And we've done a total 180, and our culture is through the roof. We've got extremely loyal team members here who buy into our vision, our culture, and our mission. And our mantra, row the boat, encapsulates all of that.
That's neat. So it sounds like even the customers are seeing that mantra. I like that. It's a better word than motto, mantra, row the boat.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's on the sleeves of all of our uniforms. It's on our website. It's on everything. We're proud of what it means. And so if anyone wants to, talk to any of my team members about it or myself, like we're open about it. It's who we are. It's what we think separates us. And culture is what isn't necessarily banners or what's on a, sleeve of a shirt. It's what you think of whenever you step foot in an organization or that customer experience. And for us, we think that we've got a pretty good customer experience. We think that our team comes to work with a positive attitude every day, wanting to get better, wanting to provide good service for our clients. And we really started to see that change once we really put emphasis on row the boat and what that means. And guys, like I said, they're bought in, they're going after those row the boat chips. They're going after the shout outs. All of our managers are required to give a shout out at our Wednesday tailgate safety talk. Cause we always say, if you go through a whole week and you can't catch someone doing something right, then you're doing something wrong. Like, we want to try to strive with a positive work environment here. And we always say we won't catch people doing the right thing versus catch someone doing the wrong thing.
Well, the success sounds fantastic. I think I want to take it back just to the beginning parts of it. How did you create, what became that mantra piece? But was this something that you established? Was that, how did your team come in? Was you facilitated? How did you get to this point? Or what would you say is the key points of getting to where you are now?
I was trying to come up with a slogan to be like, hey, how do we get everyone to buy in, to realize that we're all in this together? And I literally said, how does everyone not realize that we're all in the same boat? Like, I don't understand it. And it just kind of naturally came, like, I'm not a big boat person. Like, I'm not a boater, but everyone uses that phrase, like, get in the boat. And so I had that, and then I said, all right. And then I literally did research on rowing. And again, if you row in the same direction, everyone's got an oar. There are a lot of seats on the boat. Doesn't matter where you are, they're equally as important. So I came up with that mantra. And then when we rolled it out to the team, we did it at a Wednesday safety meeting, like I said, probably like 4 years ago. We brought a canoe and we put it in the middle of the yard. And myself and like a couple of my managers got in and we were pretending to row. And so you got to sometimes be a little goofy to get stuff across. And it certainly got their attention because they're like, what the heck is going on here? And like, Kyle's lost his mind putting a canoe in the middle of a gravel parking lot. And it got the guys to buy in. It certainly set a memory for them. And from there on, we just kept building it. But that's the thing with culture. Like, you can do something goofy and out there and bring a canoe to a shop, but you don't just set it and forget it. It's every single day. So every single day we're chipping away. We're trying to get the team to buy in. And just like, we've got 120 team members and I'd love to tell you we've got 120 guys who are hook, line, and sinker bought in to row the boat, but it's impossible, right? You're going to get a couple guys who are not as bought in as other people. That's fine. Like, we'll get them one day. And if not, we'll move on. But our biggest thing is we want to just keep trying to push the row the boat culture, ounce by ounce, day by day, and little by little, we'll get everyone buying into the culture. And we are pretty darn close right now.
Well, it's a testament to, there's just many different ways and you have to find out what fits for your organization. So some are very formal in their strategy and they have outside facilitation, big brainstorming sessions, and then they roll it out. Others will grind and to just, and I like the pieces this, putting it in action and trying something. And I'm sure some things really clicked with your team and other things didn't, but you just adjusted and pivoted. So it doesn't need to be this big formal process. It just needs to become uniquely to who you are as an organization and try that out. And so, and you probably started that with a different number of team members. And as it grows, you're finding the challenges of expanding that out versus just when five of you were in a room together saying, yeah, let's do this, or versus the large piece. So, obviously there's lots of noise out there that says we could help you with your culture, right? Lots of companies and tools and resources are out there that says we could do this. But there's also just sit at a table, come up with some ideas that are fundamentally who you all are, and just keep digging into it. But don't let go is sort of what I'm taking away from here, is you can't let go of it at all.
Yeah, you're going to have some good days. You're going to have bad days. And the owner of the company can be like the leader of the culture, but they can't end there. You've got to find your culture captains. So it's impossible to start out and be like, hey, we're going to come up with this culture program, or we're going to change our culture, and A, to think you're going to do it overnight, and B, that you're going to get 100% buy-in. You got to find your culture captains, you know, find those two or three guys who really buy in. And then it slowly spreads from there. And that's kind of what we did. We found a couple of our managers who really bought in and supported it. And then it grew and grew and grew from there. And again, it goes back to the team, and that's for the boat for us. It's all about the team. You know, we can't do anything without teamwork, and that's landscaping, whether you're, you know, digging a ditch, building a patio, cutting grass, like someone's got to build the work. Someone's got to do the work. Someone's got to sell the work. So it takes everyone on the team to get that job done from start to finish. And that's what row the boat is for us.
Are there some like technical ways that you needed to put into place? And so that, for example, you said, you know, finance doesn't understand what operations do, or the operational decisions doesn't affect, or doesn't understand, you know, the financial effect. So was there some technical processes that were able to help, you know, those different seats in the boat communicate with each other better? I think that's a challenge for a lot of companies to, by default, kind of.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think it all goes down to communication. I am a big advocate that at the root of every problem is communication. Somewhere along the line, if there is a problem, like, communication got dropped somewhere. And so we, like Brett was saying, like, we were a smaller company when we started it, you know, 4 years ago, and we didn't really have many meetings. And I said, hey, we should probably have some meetings to like let people know what's going on. So that helped out communicate to the team what direction we're going, like what are we doing this all for? What are we coming to work, you know, for 40, 50 hours a week for? What's the direction that we're going? You know, how are we getting there? Where's this boat pointed? You know, I have a course mapped out of where we're going, but if I keep it to myself, it does me no good. Like, I need the team to buy in to see where we're going, what the vision is. So, and then we implemented Aspire, and it doesn't matter what program you use, you know, getting that structure and getting that visibility. We're open book. We practice open book management. So getting everyone to see what some of the figures look like and what our goals are and how we stack up against that. It doesn't matter if you use Aspire or any other program. It's vital to help out in your culture, because you can get a lot of buy-in. Because a lot of times there can be misconception, you know, in a company that they think that, you know, you're doing terrible or you're doing great. And it's probably somewhere in between.
Yeah, great advice. It's just about having meetings, keeping the communication lines open, letting people have a voice and hear what's going on, feel like they're in the know, I think is great advice. Go ahead, Brett.
Yeah, it I could reinforce that with, you know, being on both sides of that. When you over communicate, I don't know if there's such a thing. It's about what's just sharing what's the right information. Certainly experienced many times where we've not been clear enough, and then you can't control that narrative. And then, you know, then you find yourself being inefficient with your time about how to, you know, row the boat forward. And now all of a sudden you're backstroking. And I'm trying to keep coming up with like cool, like boat analogies in my head for all this conversation, but it is that you need that clear direction. And when you have it, it works. And so experience it last week, we weren't providing enough clarity to some of our team. And it got to frustrating moments, mm-hmm. and we had to, you know, deal with that. I think we righted the ship a little bit on that one, but it just was clear that we missed an opportunity. And so sometimes, again, we get so caught up in the business of this world that we just forget to slow down and understand where the responsibilities are of sharing and communicating. So open book management, all those parts and pieces, I mean, those are huge tools that can keep people very, very clear and aligned with that. Did you find that in that space of that open book piece, what would you define as sort of the pros and the cons, or the opportunities, or the things that went easy, or the things that went hard?
With open book management?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a little bit of education, right? Half the team, you know, you throw a P&L out, or you throw some metrics and reports out from your computer software program. There's education that you've got to provide that to the team, because they might not know what they're looking at. So sometimes you can overwhelm them with information. So we try to keep it high level. We share everything except people's salaries. So they know what our gross profit is. They know what our goal is. That's the other thing. It's like, you know, if you're not keeping track of score, what's the point in playing the game? So we have our goals of what we want to hit for our gross profit, what we want to hit on our labor variance, what we want to hit on the amount of, you know, bids we have going out every quarter or every month. So we keep track of all that stuff, and we keep track of all the financial metrics, and we report that to the team every month. Then we have a quarterly meeting every quarter with my management team that will go in depth on those. But I always say, like, I have an open door policy. If anyone wants to learn more about the finances, or, you know, I might throw out some figures out there, or my director of finance might throw some figures out, and then someone sitting in the meeting be like, I have no clue what that means. That's fine. Like, come in, and I'd love to be able to talk to you and educate you a little bit more on it. So I think overwhelming people with some of the data can be a problem. And then it's just educating them of, you know, what a basic P&L is, and what a basic budget is, and what a basic metric is. And, you know, we tracked labor variance a few years ago, and half the guys were like, what is this? Like, they had no idea what it was. And we've really zoned in on that and why it's important. And it's a basic metric we keep. And I think it's just managing those expectations and educating your team on what they need to know, and not overwhelming them.
I really appreciate that, you know, mindset of being open, not only sharing finance, but teaching. And you talked about, like, that education part, you know, people that didn't get a degree in finance or minor in business or something in college, you know, a P&L can just that part alone can be a little bit overwhelming. I was just thinking, as I was listening to you talk, Kyle, of earlier in my career, I was a branch manager, and the branch wasn't really doing great financially, but none of the managers knew. They thought things were going great. And so I made that decision to every week in our staff meeting to just talk about the finance. Like, this is how we did, this is where we're at. And it was interesting to see them be empowered by that. And there was some education involved, like, well, what does this mean? You know, if we bid projects at this gross margin, then this is the effect it has. If we worked overtime last week, this is the effect it had. So there was an education, but it was really motivating to see them be empowered to start making good decisions. And it's not all about the dollar, right? All finance. You can't just make decisions on finance, or you don't get good quality or customer service. But for them to start to pull that together, and it sounds like you've seen that with your teams as well.
Oh, yeah, totally. The more information people have, like you said, they're more empowered to, there's buy-in, and they're also, they feel like, hey, I'm a part of this. I can enact change. I can write this shit. I can get us turned around. I know the solution. And like I said earlier, I'm not the smartest guy. There's tons of people on my team who are smarter than me who will come to me and be like, hey, you proposed this problem. I got this great idea of how I think we can change it. Let's do it. I'm all for it.
Right.
Yeah.
Go
for it. You finish that
stuff. No, I was going to say, I mean, but if you keep that information under lock and key, and it's just, you know, myself or my vice president knowing it, like, I'm just doing myself a disservice by not opening it up to my team to come up with ideas. Because like you said, you know, if they don't know we're not doing well, how are they supposed to know?
I think of those, again, our listeners that may be part of an organization early part of the years. And it's, you know, how do you ask the question about, if you're not open book management, how do you get to that point of where you could ask questions that could give you insight to grow? Right. So someone's really motivated by that, but they're not in a position to bring open book management to their company. It's, you know, what would be, you know, for all of us, I guess, what it would be some of the good ways of having them find that information out or dig into it. I guess you got to find out the culture if they're willing to share. And if they're not, then be, you know, tread with caution when you start asking about numbers.
Yeah, I think, you know, you start out with your upper management, letting them know, and then gauge and try to ask your team, like, you know, what's the information, you know, that's important to them? You know, where do they, it's hard because, like you said, like, you don't want to give them too much information. You want to gauge the culture and figure out so you're not overwhelming them. The most basic one is, for us, it's labor variance. You know, it's pretty simple. What are our estimated hours versus what our actual hours are? And everyone can learn that. Like, we estimated for 10, it took us 12. We lost. Like, it's not that difficult to look at that. And everyone can kind of break that down and look at it. And then from there, you can kind of expand. And you can look at gross profit. You can look at net profit. You can look at your materials costs. And you can kind of expand from there. But for me, we started out expanding out the information just by our estimated versus actual, which didn't have anything. We had no monetary figures in there. It was just hours. That's it.
Yeah, that's a good place to start. We one thing that's kind of nice about a P&L is that you can start with the big what we call at Landcare, the big dials, right? What are the big things? And then you can drill down from there. And so labor is a big dial, right? That's one thing that we look at. We're looking at a P&L, there's all sorts of stuff in there, but we look at as one of our big dials, one of our big movers, which it's not just a Landcare. It's like every business, especially businesses that are heavy people driven is labor. Yeah. How much labor's costing. And, you know, there's a good point too about giving too much financial information to people that don't necessarily understand what they're looking at and some of the risk that could cause. If they just see the top line revenue, you know, and they're like, wow, I need a raise kind of thing, you know? So helping the education part, I think that you've been talking about is really valuable. So, and I'm not advocating, I'm an advocate for being financially transparent as you are, but yeah, just understanding, I think for our listeners there's risk involved too. If you give people stuff they don't understand and then they start maybe making decisions or having feelings or thoughts about how they as employees relate to that financial information. So just being cognizant of that.
Yeah. And so, you know, if you're in an area manager, a production manager in your company, you know, to this conversation, you start with what your world's surrounded by, you know, the team, the client, the assets around that space, and you can build up. But yeah, how do you get yourself into a room where you could, if you love the company you're with, and how do you say, can you help me teach and learn? You know, that's where you have to put in that education and effort and be able to speak that language. You know, again, some companies are willing to teach and some companies out there just want you to sort of be aware and ask the right question versus just ask general questions. And so you just got to keep knowing the organizations that you're with to work through those parts. I mean, I've seen and experienced companies that share it all the way to the bottom and they have different layers as they move up through the organization. So, but it is essential. I don't think you can grow as a person within your organization without having some awareness of the financial impact, the bigger pictures, the bigger dials, the bigger scenarios, the reason that you all exist, you know, be it tied to profitability or keeping, you know, keeping things moving in the right direction. So it's recognizing that you could put a lot of plants in the ground, you can mow a lot of grass, and you could say you keep in these hours within the variance, but you have to still need to understand some of the bigger reasons why you're doing those things. And hopefully organizations keep sharing that information and sharing those whys. If it was that easy, everybody would be doing it. Is that how that saying that goes that way? So, and sometimes it's not good information. And companies will fear sharing bad news will send mm-hmm. people the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. And you have to sort of trust in the culture of the organization to get you through that. And if your organization doesn't have that strength in that culture, then, you know, prepare accordingly. But if you got to get that information out because they're going to be the ones, to your point, are going to solve the problems for you faster than you saying, hey, please do this, you know, take 2% off of everything. Well, what's 2%? 2% means, can you figure out how to do it, that job with one less person for the next couple of weeks? Oh, okay. Yeah, I could do that. So, it's don't be afraid of going down this path, even if it feels uncomfortable. That should be only temporary, I would think. You hope.
I was thinking too how this finance part of our discussion does relate back to the row the boat mantra that Kyle, that you have, and getting people on the same page. I guess to continue the analogy, it's like, well, where are we rowing the boat? You know, how are we rowing the boat? What's the goal? And yeah, it's fun when financially things are going well and people are, you know, rowing and they see, and I'm sure there's discussions about, you know, what opportunities can come with profits. But yeah, the bad news too, or when there's a month that's not so great, that happens to everybody. I mean, you know, we have our monthly close at Landcare with all 63 branches, and not everyone is profitable every month. So you kind of go, you know, help people understand the ups and downs, the seasonality of the work, as it is for us and it is for Kyle, for you guys in Maryland. You know, it's a powerful thing. But I guess I was just thinking how it relates to the row the boat, you know, getting people rowing together and in the direction that we want to go, and why that's important.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's like what we talked about. That was part of the issue a few years ago. Like, guys were thinking, you know, I was just, you know, collecting money hand over fist. And I'm like, it's not that simple. Like, yeah. You know, there's a lot going into this. So my finance manager was getting frustrated. And so, yeah, I mean, it is 100% true. Like, you got to know where you're going and you got to have those tough conversations. Cause yeah, we don't bat 1,000. We don't have great months every single month. We don't have great years every single year. There's an ebb and flow to this industry and just like any company. So being able to have those conversations and open and honest and transparent conversations with our team is extremely important. And that's vital to our culture. And like you said, what row the boat to us means.
So, all right. So here, I got some analogies. I've been thinking these. So you're going through some rough water, right? So it's a little more of a rapids rather than nice little placid lake kind of move. So different waters mean different kind of experiences, different techniques, or there could be a little hole or crack in the boat and you're taking on water. How do you patch that? Oh, man, I'm going to write down a bunch, Kyle. I'm going to send you a ton of things. You've already done them all, I'm sure. And, but it is the symbolism. I mean, is very visual. So, so I can appreciate the strength that has when you do figure that out. And even as, you know, as joining you on this call, the idea, like, we could visualize what you're trying to achieve. Yeah. That's pretty powerful. So I don't think you can patent that at all or copyright it. That seems like something that we've all borrowed, but you know, go ahead. I think try it, and then we'll.
I don't know.
Yeah, pennies a day for anybody that says, you know, row the boat, right? Yeah. So be fine. You wouldn't even have to worry about the landscaping part.
Yeah, exactly. It can be my side business.
You know, as we get to the end here, I think the important part is just to frame, you know, I guess, what have you been thankful for? We've done it in the rose and thorn segments of pieces here, but it is, maybe you frame that to just, and because it's November, I think it's the month of giving thanks. What have you been thankful for within your organization and maybe in personal life, or, you know, and then traditional rose and thorn, of course, anything that's been going really well or anything that's been a little tad annoying for you? What would you share with the group?
First and foremost, you know, I'm thankful for my team. I'd be nowhere without them. That we've got a great group of men and women who have, but again, bought into the vision that we've created. And again, we're all rowing in the same direction. We've got 120 people here, but we're a very close-knit group. We're a small management group of managers and directors that keep this thing going every single day. And the time and effort that they put in is very admirable, buying into what we're doing. We've got great clients. We've got supportive vendors. We've just got a great network. We're very, very thankful for that. And again, my family has been extremely supportive. My wife, my two kids, extremely supportive of the long hours it takes to be an entrepreneur, the long hours it takes to build a company, build a culture and an organization. So I'm very grateful for that. And again, it all goes back to people. We talked about finances earlier. We talked about, you know, structure and SOPs and stuff like that, which we all love and we thrive at. But at the end of the day, it's all about people and it's all about building relationships. And that's what business is about. Business is about relationships and it's about how you treat people. That goes back to our core values. You know, when I was a little kid and I was cutting grass, I asked my dad, like, hey, how do I get my business to grow. And he said, if you treat people the right way, you do good work, and you know, you're respectful to people, then good things are going to happen. And that stuck with me. So when I started the company out of college, we got our core values of honesty, quality, respect, and we added accountability this year. And that's the roots of who we are. We do things the right way. We say what we're going to do. And I've got 120 people who I can count on every single day who do that. And I'm very, very fortunate.
Perfect. Thanks for this time of year. So you're going to have a wonderful Thanksgiving. I'm certain of that one. Skylar, how about you? What's in your world these days with the Fangs or Rose Thorn?
Yeah, I got some things that I'm thankful for. Just thinking, you know, recently, so this weekend, my wife and I were able to go out together on, you know, last night to have a very nice dinner in downtown Dallas and go to a concert, to a live concert. It's a group that we have really liked for a long time. It's called Postmodern Jukebox. And little plug for them. Go and look them up on YouTube.
Can you try singing some right now?
Real quick. I cannot do that. Oh, I cannot do that. But it's a really, really great a group and kind of a cool story. So Postmodern Jukebox, we're able to go see them live in kind of this cool neighborhood area of Dallas called Deep Ellum, which is a historic, you know, jazz, black area, black business, jazz area, kind of a cool vibe down there. And we got to go see this this group that we'd really loved for a long time. And it's the first time we were able to actually see them perform live. So nice dinner, just hearing really great music and vocals from some really talented individuals live with my wife. It was just super enjoyable. So we've been looking forward to that all summer. I think I bought the tickets back in April or something. So it's been a long time in coming. So really great, thankful for that. You know, this sounds kind of corny too, but I'm just grateful for the opportunity to be, you know, to have work in our industry, to be involved with gentlemen like you, to get to work and you know, people work with people that have, you know, similar mindset and are like-minded. As far as kind of a challenge or thorn, you know, this is something that's actually worked itself out, but I'm working on a project with Aspire to get Aspire into the college classrooms more and to help college faculty build curriculum. And so we've been working on a big project there. It's going really well, but we had a few hiccups the past couple of weeks with some of the development. And so it's all good though. It was a little thorn, but it's all healed up, and it's actually a cool project we're working on. But
I like that idea of getting into the classrooms.
Yeah, it's great. We're going to be going to into six different universities over the next couple months and having some land care people get into the classroom. Kyle, I was a professor before the role that I'm in at now at land care. So working with some of the material I had to get some more stuff into college students curriculum. So yeah, I'll be quiet now. I'd like to hear what Brett's thankful for and what his rose and thorn is.
Well, you know, we just completed, what was it? Wonderful snow rodeo, which is just getting our minds around what the next season is going to be around here. We did it at a new facility, one of our new branches. And so we got to show off some of that. And this place has been built from scratch. So it's a long time coming and still got some ways, but it, you know, it's going to have that new feel. So I hope that it shared just the optimism of growth within the company. And I think it did, but, and made everybody a little jealous of who's not in the branch. Says, well, this is going to be a nice new spot and this is all new paved and not mud. Yeah. So, so that was a lot of fun. Anytime we have our sort of seasonal kickoffs or, times together as a group, lots of fun. And we did scenario training. We did, equipment training. So we've been just getting that event to be much deeper than, here's a plow and it pushes snow. I still want to find one of those snow making machines or somehow to make some snow. I saw people that you see all the snow rodeos happen throughout LinkedIn these days and people are pushing mulch, people are pushing leaves. I'm like, I would love to. Let's make,
you make it more realistic.
Right. We got it. So, and we salted for our first time on Monday. So we are, Wednesday. So we've already had our first snow. So it's here.
Bring on that snow and ice revenue. Finish out the year strong.
That's it. So there's anxiety around snow, as there always is with the intensity of upstate New York snow. But I'm happy that we are well underway. Lots of fun the month ahead with the family. Always maybe not as busy, so I'm thankful for not as busy. Kids activities. So finding a good balance, not something I had all year with between business and family, but we're finding that right now. So, we do it for the family. We do it for other people's families. I think we had a good opportunity to recognize what all this effort was for this past week here. So, but Kyle, I think I appreciate the perspective. I think the framing, when anybody picks up this podcast, I hope that it just is well timed for them just to, understand what it means to connect with your people, the tools that you can connect with your people with. There's no better way than just getting into it, have an idea and just put it out there and watch the team sort of run with that. So I commend you for the efforts and just impressed with what you've been able to accomplish.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on today, guest.
Absolutely. It's great talking to you.
Yeah. Well, and to our listeners, we're going to have many more guests like Kyle as we go in to the end of this year and already thinking about the new year ahead. So stay tuned. We will get to see more of how Kyle's beard turns grayer and longer. And so we'll keep posting some good photos on that one. So there's all the fun things. It's just not just about landscaping and grounds management and snow. We talk about really good stuff, cool stuff here. So thank you to our listeners. Thank you again, Kyle. Great to see you, Skylar. Y'all, yes. We'll talk to y'all next time. Take care.
Yeah, good to see you. Have a good week.